Welcome to the Mustang Owners Podcast. And now your host, Steve Hall.
Welcome to another episode of Mustang Owners Podcast. I'm Steve Hall, the Executive Director of the Mustang Owners Museum, and we're located about a mile away from Charlotte Motor Speedway. And today's guest is Charles Turner. Charles, for those who have been in the MCA and the Shelby world, really well known as both a judge and a restoration god. Some of the stuff he's done, we happen to have one of his vehicles in the museum now. I always relate the story to the 1964 and a half pace car that we have that Charles had restored. That one time when we were lucky to have Gail Halderman in the museum, he walked by and he saw the car and he looked at it and looked at it and looked at it, and he comes over and he grabs me and he says, you know, Steve, we didn't even make them this well when we built them. So it is obviously a testament to how just beautiful the work is done. But Charles has done a few other things other than the pace car, and in particular at our National Mustang Day event, spoke about Shelby 003. So I'd like to chat a little bit with Charles about that. But first, Charles, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, we look forward to it because obviously the car was everybody enjoyed seeing the car. The owner was great that he came up to be part of it also, which was totally unexpected. His couple guys that goes with the car, they're phenomenal. So let's chat a little bit about the 1965 GT350, which was the very first Shelby built.
Sure. So my involvement with the car basically started as a helping Nick Smith, the owner. He wanted some judges to look over the car after he had purchased it. He had sent it to a restoration shop in Oklahoma that had done some work on the car for the previous owner. So Nick had it sent there after he bought the car to get a few things taken care of. So the previous owner had restored it to a very high level, and he had been driving it a little bit. So he took it off, taken off some of the NOS parts like radiator hoses and those sorts of things that didn't make any sense to drive on. But Nick wanted all that to be, he wanted the car to be authentic. He really had no intention of driving a car or anything like that. But so anyway, he invited myself and a few other judges out to Oklahoma, basically just to look the car over and evaluate it and see what all needed to be done with it. So that was my initial involvement with the car.
So, what happens next after do you give him some information as to what you think the restoration should be or what needs to be done, or how do you guys get to the conversation or to the point where you actually start working on the car?
When I originally was asked to go there by Nick, I mean, I was just going to help him. I had no expectations or anything. I was actually just kind of felt privileged that I was even able just to look at the car, the very first GT350. I mean, that's a very significant car. And to get up close and personal to something like that, that was just a treat to me. And so we went there and we looked the car over. We found a lot more than we thought we were going to find. We wrote up about 6 pages worth of stuff we wrote up on the car. And a lot of it was, a lot of little stuff here and there. And so anyway, Nick was kind of had to do some thinking about how he wanted to approach that. We both had the same outbound flight that evening, and we were sitting in the terminal just kind of chatting. And we were talking, and he was like, "Oh, I'm not sure." You know, he asked me if I had any advice on who should work on the car. I think I remember my response was, "Well, there's probably less than 10 people in the world that are qualified to work on this car and to really know the nuts and bolts and things like that. There's certainly lots of skilled people that know how to do restoration work, but that particular car is very, very unique." I gave him a couple of names, but the problem with that was that Nick didn't want to wait. You know, I said, well, most of these guys have a couple of people like Bob Perkins and things like that, but, you know, they have multi-year waits. And then it was weird. He just kind of looked at me and said, well, what about you? and I was kind of taken aback by that because I, like I said, I had no expectations. I was just kind of somewhat speechless there for a minute or so. And then we just kind of went from there.
Obviously, you'd already had given him notes to what the car needed and such. And obviously, he must have concurred with you that those were some things that he felt was necessary. Also, the process is you the two of you kind of decide to, you're going to do this work. But when did you get started on this? What time? I mean, if you don't mind, just kind of year or what have you. But I'm going to get into how long it took to do this, of course. But when did you get started?
We inspected the car. I believe it was in November or December of 2018. Gosh, I can't believe it's been that long already. And we talked about the car coming to my place in early 19. So I actually, and it was, and you remember Chris, was one of the, Chris Hag was one of the guys that works with Nick taking care of his car. So he delivered the car March of 19.
Okay. So they brought it up to where you live. So you're working there out of your shop. How long before you were able to start getting into it though? Then, so as you got the car, probably have, like I said, a little bit of a game plan. So when you look at this car, what would be some of the points that you say, okay, here's what I need to get started on. Here's what we do first.
So we had the list that was the plan was to work on the list. And so when I got it, basically it was like, okay, some things had to be disassembled. So one of the big things was that we were going to repaint the engine bay. And a lot of the suspension parts had begun to deteriorate condition-wise, and there was some incorrect parts here and there. So it made sense just to strip everything from the firewall forward and take the fenders and all that kind of stuff off. Because, you know, if you try to work around parts and detail things, it just never looks right. And I know these cars like the back of my hand, so I mean, I have no problem taking things completely apart. Yeah, that was one of the biggest things was the engine bay and all the suspension rework. And there was some work in the interior that we're going to try to do. And then, you know, little odds and ends here and there on the car. So the approach was basically just to work on the list when I originally got the car. And I got started on it right away. Found my old notes here. The car arrived on March 9th. And on March 10th, I've got pictures of parts coming off the car. I mean, and then it kind of gradually goes from there.
As you mentioned a moment ago, you said, you know, the car is like the back of your hand. This might be a good point or a good time just to tell everybody a little bit about Charles Turner, because Charles has been, like I said, he's been a judge for both MCA and for SAC. How long have you been doing the judging work?
I got involved in the judging in the mid-90s. And remember, I'm in my early 50s, so that I was in my 20s in the 90s. I was always the young guy. I guess I still feel like I'm the young guy everywhere I go.
You are.
But it's 65 Fastback that I bought, I think around 93, 94. It was a project, and I actually ended up driving it as a project, and it looked awful. It had primer and stuff on it. But then I actually was into Mustangs for quite a while, since the kind of the mid to late 80s. I had my first car was a 68 Mustang, and I wasn't doing restoration work. I was just kind of keeping it going, but that sort of piqued my interest, and then I kind of grew from there. And I went to NC State University to go to college, and there was a shop in Raleigh, and I ended up befriending a guy there that ran an upholstery trim shop in downtown Raleigh, and his name was Lenny Garner. And he actually ended up, he did Mustang restorations on the side. And so I was just looking for something to do, like, you know, between classes and weekends and stuff. And I went down there and I saw he had some old cars, and I was like, hey, would it be all right if I helped you out? And I told him, I said, I don't care if you pay me or not. And he was like, oh, really? I ended up helping him do restorations. And he kind of did just, you know, put together rolling type restorations. And, you know, he did like interiors, convertible tops, bumpers and paint and that sort of thing. Just kind of spit them up nice and make them look pretty and sell them. And so I helped him, and that kind of got me going. And then I got my Fastback. And then, I don't know, just kind of got more involved in it. And then that car, I finished it, I believe, in 97. And I'd been judging for a year or so before that at MCA. And then I showed that car in Pensacola in 97 or 98, I think, Concours trailer class. On the first show out, I got a gold.
Wow. Well, being that you, I was going to ask you, in MCA, what area are you an MCA judge? What class?
Well, I've been certified and go-kart judge for quite a few of the early, but my core area is 64 and a half to 68. I haven't done much in 69 and higher. So, but I started out as a certified judge in 64 and a half and 60. And at the time we had in MCA, we had 64 and a half to 65, and then we had 66. So it was actually two. So I was certified in both and then became a go-kart. So I became a go-kart in MCA, I believe, at like 28 years old. So it was pretty early.
Yes, that is young, as you'd say. That is young.
Yeah. But we don't see that, it seems like, these days.
No. Well, let's move back to the car itself. It's as such. And so, of course, as you, like I said, you got your list, you were working on the list. Did you and Nick have a timeline that was in mind, what you wanted to do with the car? Or also my next, the other question is, as you're getting into the car, you find some things that were unexpected to say, oops, this wasn't what we thought it would be.
Yeah, and that always happens. I mean, that's really expected. As far as the goals, though, Nick was very, he wanted to take it to all the big shows that year in 19. So we had MCA, SAC, and McCack, and the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals later in the year. So he was pretty ambitious. And I looked at the car, and I was like, I thought that I could get it done, you know, within the timeline that he was wanting. But yeah, that's exactly what happened. So Steve, yeah, I was working on the car basically by myself. I didn't really have a lot of help. I have an older son that's kind of getting into it now. So, but at the time it was just myself. And I mean, there was a lot more as I started peeling back the layers, especially like taking the interior out. There was a lot of things that I was surprised to find, but nothing. I mean, it was just, you know, a lot of aesthetics and things like that. It wasn't anything major, but yeah, it started to snowball a little bit. But nothing that was, you know, anything that I couldn't handle.
Right. But of course, it kind of changes changes Nick's goals as to what shows he can go to or when he can go to shows. So I'm assuming that kind of made 2019 a little bit difficult to get out with the car. And then 2020 hits, and we all know what happens when 2020 comes around. Nothing you can do except work on cars. And so, which a lot of folks, of course, did that time frame. So it was 2021 when the car first was able to start to get out a little bit and go to some shows?
So it was at the end of 20, because what happened was along the way, when I started taking the car apart, we started talking about the paint on the car, and it had the most gorgeous paint job you've ever seen on it. It was perfect. But the problem with that is perfection isn't authentic. You know, we went around and around and tried to justify the paint quality on the car, and there was just no way that we could do that for the level that Nick wanted the car to be. He wanted it to be the best of the best, and to be the best of the best, it has to have a correct paint job on it, which includes orange peel and that sort of thing. And so we decided, I believe it was sometime around May of 19, we decided to have the car repainted. So it went to Jason Billups' restoration shop in Oklahoma, and it was a stripped down car, and then he took the remaining materials off the car and did a complete respray of the whole car. And it came back to me in September of that year. And then, you know, we basically decided that, well, maybe we can try to get the car to McCacken, which was the last show of the year. And that's where it kind of took a twist of fate kind of thing, you know, it took a turn in the restoration, because we decided, well, wouldn't it be cool to show the car as the original, how it was delivered to Ford, to Shelby American, as a knockdown Mustang. And that's, we ended up taking it to the Muscle Car and Corvette Nationals in November 19. And it won there was a class that they have there that's no reproduction parts, and it won the highest awards in that class as a Mustang with no hood and no rear seat.
Oh, well, hey, how interesting. So again, so I guess 2020, as we all got into 2020, not much going on. What has it been to a number? Has it gone to some car shows recently? Or obviously it was here for National Mustang Day, which we are extremely happy and proud, and we appreciate your helping us get that connection to have the car here. But last year, did it make any of those car shows that you mentioned?
It did, and actually in 2020, you know, obviously the COVID thing, the plan was we have a Mustang and we're going to convert it to a GT350. Exactly was done at Shelby American in 1964. And so we were planning to do that, I believe, around April, May of 2020. And then, you know, we just couldn't make it happen. And then it ended up, we set our sights on end of August, early September of that year. And then the plan was, you know, hopefully we would try to take it back to McCacken that fall. Well, McCacken got canceled, just like everything else. But we actually were able to take it to the Fall Classic at French Lick, the Indy Regional SAC Club. They do a spring fling every year. Well, Ed Meyer got well-known restoration and parts guy. He's in that club, and he convinced them to do a fall classic, and it was an indoor event in French Lick, Indiana. And so we took the car there, and it was judged by the Mid-America Tulsa meet judging standards, and it won a gold there, and it won Heritage Elite. And then in 2021, that's where we ran the whole gamut of the MCA and SAC and McCacken and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it won gold in every event that it was taken to, multiple thoroughbred golds, SAC Division One Premier. Yeah. So it did everything.
Which Mustang Club of America event did you guys go to in 21?
We went to two. We went to the first one down there in Braselton, the MCA anniversary event, I believe it was.
Right, the 45th.
Yeah, and they had a judging there. They were had a judging classes that you could put it in just like normal MCA, and they got a gold in the thoroughbred class there. So we wanted to get it to at least one MCA show before we took it to the Grand National, because we just wanted to see, you know, how it was going to be judged in MCA. We got some things we needed, you know, had to work on, and then the next shows were, it was all kind of the same thing. Every show there was something a little here or there that we went back fixed.
Mm-hmm. So for 2022, for those listeners who might be interested in seeing if the car may be going to some shows around their area, does Nick have plans to be going to any shows this year?
We're definitely going to the Shelby Convention in Indianapolis in a few weeks. That'll be the SAC 47 event, and it'll be in the concourse section there. I don't know any other shows beyond that. We had discussed taking it back to MCA, the Augusta MCA Grand National, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not. And other than that, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know that there'll be any other shows beyond that for this year.
Gotcha. Well, I know that one thing that was nice to hear from Nick was that he does plan, even though the car, of course, is very, you know, has a lot of heritage and connection to it, he does plan to be an owner that likes to take the car to shows. Now, it doesn't mean he's going to be out there every weekend, but there may be one or two shows a year he does take the car to, and he shares it with the enthusiasts to see. So that's great, because it's always nice to see cars like that. You know, people want to see those cars. They want to be able to kind of look at those things and appreciate that, the vehicles themselves also. So I think it's great to have an owner like that who wants to share the car with the enthusiasts and the hobby. So kudos to Mr. Smith for doing so. So I think the hobby really appreciates things like that.
Yeah. There is one that he will be in Lakeland, Florida, October 14th to the 16th. There's a Lake Mirror Classic show.
Oh yeah. No, I've heard about it. Never quite been to it, of course, because that's where well, there's a number of different, some of the guys from Mustang Monthly used to live in the area. Mustang Times is done in that area. What is that? Peacock Insurance is in that area. In fact, I think Ford Heacock was the first guy that started that, if I remember correctly. So yeah, there's a lot of connection there with the automotive world. So, well, let me drift over a little bit to a car we have in our museum, and not the Indy Pace car, but a little bit. We certainly had Todd at our show, Todd Adams, the owner of, we call it VIN number 211, but that's our barn find car. But I know you have a little connection to it, and I was hoping you just kind of tell us a little bit how you got involved with doing a little work or research on the car itself, and how someone put you in touch with Todd, how Todd got a hold of you, and, you know, kind of what transpired from there.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure how Todd found me, most likely through the Vintage Mustang forum online, because I was very active in that forum at the time. And so, yeah, he basically, the way I understand it, he was watching Barrett Jackson or some car auction or something like that, and he read something online about 212 VIN number, and saw the price tag on the car. I guess that was like $1 million or something. But anyway, I guess he thought that he might have a number close to that or lower than that. So he had this $600 coupe that is basically in a chicken barn. I can't remember what it was. I know that the ground was so hard. I think he told me it was frozen chicken or cow manure or something. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, it's a true barn find.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But anyway, he got in touch with me somehow through the forum or online or something like that. And, you know, he was in the Winston-Salem area, and the car was in Greensboro, near Greensboro and Burlington area, which is not only about an hour away from where I am. And I guess he realized, with, you know, the experience that I had, restorations and things like that, he thought it'd be a good idea for me to look at the car, because as you may know, there was a lot of people there were questioning the authenticity of that car. Obviously the folks in the 212 camp thought that they had the earliest car, so, and sure, they thrown a lot of eggs in their basket. And so he asked me to come out and look at the car, and yeah, it was exactly what he said it was. And I guess I was probably one of the first people to look at it other than him when he realized what it might have been. So yeah, it was a real treat to look at that. One of the things that was really cool, I don't know if you know the story, is I was taking pictures of the car, and I kind of was just pointing my camera wherever, right? And I got back home and I was looking through the pictures, and I took a picture up under the dash, above the heater box area, and there was a green and white sticker back there, and I zoomed in on it, and it said pre-production material. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. You know, because who would have ever found that if I hadn't pointed that camera right up there? And it should be on the car today still. I don't think any of that's been tampered with since then.
Sometimes it's hard, but you did a little research, though, to help him kind of determine that.
Sure.
But if you don't mind, because, of course, you know, there's no Kevin Marty report for the car.
Right.
There's nothing out there that says, hey, here definitively is what you got. So if you would, I'm kind of curious, what were some of the resources that you used to kind of help Todd get a little bit more detail about the car?
Well, I mean, the one thing that I did was kind of the clincher was I took it upon myself to do a DMV title history search in North Carolina. And in North Carolina, for those that don't know, actually keeps records all the way back as far, I don't know, maybe into the 50s. But anyway, basically all you have to do is submit the VIN and you know, you have to say that you're not going to use it for anything other than like research purposes and things like that, or educational reasons. Basically, they don't want you contacting previous owners. But I did that, and when I got the report back, it had a copy of the original manufacturer statement of origin, the MSO, and on the MSO it had the VIN number and the body type and all that kind of stuff, and had the address of the original selling dealership, it was Dobbs Ford, and so it was pretty much, there was no question about the car at that point. You know, you could say all you want about, you know, restamped VINs and this and that, but here's a piece of paper that ties the car to exactly the time period that was expected. So that was the main thing. Otherwise, I mean, it was basically my own personal knowledge that I used and knowing certain things to look for that are early versus late. You may know that we pulled one of the fenders back. We unbolted one of the fenders and pulled the fender back so that we could see the hidden VIN. And it matched the visible VIN, and that had never been altered before. So basically my job was to authenticate the car for Todd, and I was very certain that what I saw was the earliest known unit number for an 09C car.
It's, as they say, it is the real McCoy by such, and that's why I thought it was nice to be able to see that and share that. And now I know, again, I was a little, when I first met Todd, I was a little, not to say confused, but a little concerned. Was he at one time thinking about actually trying to restore the vehicle?
I think he had an offer for someone to buy the car. I think it was the folks that had the 212 car. Came down and looked at the car, and they put an offer in on it, and then I guess everything fizzled out. But anyway, I guess it just kind of, you know, fizzled out a little bit as far as interest in the car. But I mean, I think it should remain like it is, because that car, once you restore it, you know, you kind of lose all that intrinsic value, all that,
right?
You know, because there's no, you can't refute it for what it is right now. Once it's restored, you kind of open up questions like, well, what was done? And you've seen the car. I mean, there's areas on the car, like the trunk lid and things like that. I mean, it'd be very hard to repair. There's rust holes. And so it's kind of like, you know, it's almost better just to leave it as it is, because at the end of the day, I mean, value wise, it's a 6-owner, a 3-speed manual transmission. You can add some value for it being, but you know, the trick is it's the earliest known. You know, there's nothing to say that 200, you know, 2210 or 100210 might show up, right?
Right.
Or 009. I mean, who knows? We don't even know exactly when they restarted the sequence number. My guess is 100-2201 or 200, something like that. But we've never seen any cars with an earlier number.
Well, I know when I first saw the car, which is actually, it was in the Auto Barn, which is a local consignment dealership in the Concord area. I went over there, I looked at the car, and decided, well, you know, it needs some help. But then I saw there was a piece of paper on the dash, and it had your notes on there. And that's what actually piqued my interest, because that's when I called you and chatted with you about the car, and you put me in touch with Todd, and we chatted. And I think Todd had kind of come to the conclusion that, you know, he could restore it. But again, like you said, you know, you're going to lose the provenance of the history to it because now it's no longer original. And so he kind of like, you know, yeah, you know, let's put it in the museum. I think he's happy to have it here and to share with everybody. And I think a number of folks, when they come in, they look at the car, they grasp that what the VIN numbers, the numbers mean. So it's very nice to have that car here because, like you said, otherwise he has a car at home that needs restoration because otherwise it's going to be a barn find in his house or his garage, to be honest with you. Well,
I wish we had more information on the cars because, you know, even though it's the unit number is what it is, I mean, it could have been the 100th car made that first day of production.
Exactly, because they're not made sequentially at all. You're absolutely right. There's no rhyme or reason for that. So,
you know, the job one stuff is always a stage thing too, usually. So even the red convertibles or whatever that come off the line, you know, who knows what number they actually were, you know.
No, exactly. You're right.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating because, we don't know. If it was 67, we'd know better, at least, you know, when the car was built, not necessarily the order of the day.
Definitely get a little bit more information out of that than you do what we have now. So I know Kevin Marty keeps asking, anybody ever come up with the information on the, you know, the 64 and a half through 66? He would love to talk to you. So
I think it's on the bottom of a landfill somewhere.
I know. If you listen to Marty, if people listen to the podcast with Marty, he kind of explains that, you know, because there had been the rumor about the fire, rumor about the water. But the bottom line, I think he said it's actually in a landfill somewhere. So, no, that's a shame.
Ford wasn't required to keep the data anymore. So
no, they, no.
And the hardware and storage media that it was on.
Exactly.
Massive amount of room. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being on. We always like to ask our guests before we sign off what are you driving?
What am I driving? I've got a 2013 Expedition just like you, Steve.
So welcome to the club. All right. What else you got?
I sold my 68 Shelby at Barrett Jackson, and I got a few MGBs, and I've got a 65 coupe Mustang.
Okay.
And I think that's all I have for now.
Well, again, I really appreciate the time, Charles. I know we tried a couple of times to get you on. And it would be an interesting conversation, so I'm glad we were able to make it happen today. So thank you very much, and we'll talk soon. We'll probably see you at an MCA event.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate all you've done for us. Bye-bye.